Happy Texas Tiki Week, and thank you for joining me for another episode of Marooned, a Texas Tiki podcast. My guest this week is my cooker, fellow Texas Tiki file, and owner of Ravon Vintage in Austin, Texas. In this episode, we're chatting about Mike's roots in the Maikai, his move to Texas, and his recent trips to Cuba and Tiki Oasis. You'll also hear him shaking up a cocktail or two throughout the episode. Be sure to head out to Contigo in Austin, Texas this Saturday for the Tiki Village Sippin' Shop. Jen and I will be in attendance, as well as our guest Mike, who will be vending with Ravon Vintage and spinning your favorite surf and exotica records. Everyone's favorite doodler, the Boozy Doodler, will be vending as well, so be sure to head out and buy a ton of prints from him. I hope to meet some of y'all out in Austin this weekend, and if you can't make it, well, I hope you have a rad weekend anyways. As always, if you'd like to drink along with us, fire up the Total Tiki app, shake up a cocktail, sit back, relax, and welcome to episode number 6 of Marooned, a Texas Tiki podcast. So is that your first trip to Oasis this past year?
Yep.
Nice. How was it?
It was amazing. We've only ever gone to one Hukilau, so I've never gone to another big like Tiki festival like that before. And I didn't know what to expect, but it was just a ton of fun.
Yeah. Did you check out any room parties? Did you have a room party?
Well, we brought provisions, but we didn't have any kind of official room party. But there was a lot of people from Texas, like from the Tiki Files, that were in attendance. So kind of whenever there'd be a break between symposiums, I just like call everybody up and make some drinks.
That's cool. Yeah, that's my whole thing. Like, Oasis has just gotten so huge, though. At this point, I kind of think I'd rather check out Hukilau than Oasis, personally, but yeah, it just depends. What was your preference, or did you have a preference on events?
The thing that really excited me, that I was super stoked about, was the Martin Cate Symposium. And it was awesome. Like, I've heard he always, like, pulls out all the stops and does crazy antics and stuff. Sorry, just need to finish your drinks up here, and then I can get my thoughts together.
That's alright. Appreciate it.
Here you go.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Here you are.
That is delicious.
So this is basically what I'm calling a Cuban daiquiri. My wife and I went to Cuba this past April. Our friend Johnny joined along, which is pretty cool. And I mean, we could talk about Cuba for this whole episode. but really, my focus was going to certain bars and drinking daiquiris. And so we went to Floridita, and we heard, you know, it's a tourist trap now. They actually have, like, bus tours that let people out there, so there's just, like, swarms of people. And we went in, excuse me, and there was just so many people inside, and it was like, is this even going to be enjoyable?
Yeah.
And it's like an assembly line. Like, they're blending up the daiquiris, like, 20 at a time. There's like three blenders going. They're just like throwing ingredients in, and then they just throw the bottle of Havana Club like on top and just walk away. So it's just pouring out. And, you know, then they fill a tray of daiquiri glasses and they just like top them all off. And then a second later, they're all gone because people are just waiting. So it was interesting. And we had learned, you know, if you want to shake in daiquiri, you have to ask for like natural.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's going to be frozen. And we had some concerns about consuming too much water there.
Yeah.
So we're like, you know, if we drink frozen daiquiris, like all that ice is diluting into our drink.
Yeah.
Like, not only do I prefer a shaken daiquiri that's strained, because I don't like brain freeze or anything like that.
Yeah.
I was like, less dilution if it's shaken. But, you know, they're dealing with like hundreds of people at once, and they're just like, they've got this system down. So, of course, I'm the jerk that...
You're throwing a wrench in the...
Yeah. So, you know, they gave me a look, but did it, and it was great. And So I want to make a point of like going back another time. Like I heard, like, find the lull, like between the bus tours, like it empties out and then it's great. And so a couple other times we walked by and it's like, no, it's still packed. And then it was getting near like our last day and it's like, okay, we're just gonna have to go in there. And you know, we waited several minutes just to get a seat at the bar. And then, you know, the first daiquiri, we got it frozen. And I noticed somebody next to me drinking something else that's not a daiquiri. I'm like, wait, are there options here? Like, all I've seen is daiquiris. I'm like, what is that? And he's like, it's a Hemingway. I'm like, oh, so is this like daiquiri and grapefruit? So I asked for that, and so they make that, and it wasn't very good. Just not very balanced. It was kind of a crappy drink. And then, you know, we didn't want to give up our seat. So we ordered another one. So three drinks in about 40 minutes or so. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to ask for a shaken one. Because it died out a little bit, but there were still like tons of people. And I don't know if it's the fact that I'd drinking already like 6 ounces of liquor in a very short amount of time. But man, when that one came out, it was just a thing of magic. I mean, it was just like every sip was just like,
yeah,
this is what life is for. And I'm like, I get it now. Like, this is what, when Trader Vic came out here all these years ago, this is what he wanted to bring back. I mean, it's just, it's so simple, but it's divine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I watched him make it, and they put maraschino in it, so it's not just rum, lime, and sugar. So when I bought 3 bottles of Havana Club 3 here to bring back home, mm-hmm. and promptly in the first 2 or 3 days after I got back, went through 1 bottle.
Wow.
Just trying to mimic that taste that I had there, because it was just so good. And I think I finally nailed it. There's a lot of trial and error, and there's like, you know, you figure rum, lime, and sugar, it's just like, how hard could it be? You know, just figuring out the proportions. But I'm like, I don't even know what kind of citrus they have there. Because everything, I never saw a lime or a lemon. Like, I went to markets, they never had any citrus.
Interesting.
So I'm like, what are they using lime, Persian limes? Are they using key limes? Are they using something they got from Venezuela or something frozen from concentrate?
Yeah, something bottled, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, so then there was that variable. So I started messing around with key limes and different things. And I'm like, even their sugar, like how processed or unprocessed is there sugar there? Mm-hmm. And it's like all these factors, you know, and then even the maraschino, like whatever brand they were using is not one we get here.
Yeah.
So I had the rum, that was the one constant. But it took me, you know, a dozen or so tries, and I think I kind of dialed in the flavor of what I experienced there. So that was exciting. So that's, that's what you're drinking now.
Okay. Appreciate
more or
it.
Less.
Yeah, it's very delicious.
The Cuba's a trip. I highly recommend everybody experience it.
I would like to go because I've heard about the Trader's Vic and it's like unchanged, untouched, original.
Oh, it's phenomenal. We got to go through like this old scrapbook that they had of all these like black and white photos of when it opened in 58
right.
or whenever it was.
Yeah.
And you know, they were only around for 1 year before the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so there's all these like celebrities when it first opened. And yeah, I mean, just we would look at a photo and then we'd walk to like where it was taken and it's like identical.
Yeah,
so
that's amazing. It's like a time capsule.
Yeah, and there's nobody there. I mean, it's just like some of the people at the hotel will find it, but I mean, how many tiki people are really going?
Yeah.
I mean, per day or per month, you know? I mean,
yeah, people who will actually appreciate it, not just the tourists, just because it's there.
And there's like a brightly lit cafe in the front of the hotel, so it's like that's where everyone goes to eat, you know? So it's. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to know it's there to find it and to experience it. And that was a lot of fun. I mean, we had one night there. And, you know, the drinks weren't anything special, but, you know, the experience was incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, the hotel it's in, you know, it used to be a Hilton. Now it's the Habana Libre. And, you know, it still looks the same. It's got a mosaic in the front that's like 16 million Italian tiles or something.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
What
that's
was it
awesome.
Like? Was it like run down? Was it?
No, I mean, it was well kept.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's all state run, so like, they keep them running. I mean, even if they're not producing a profit or anything, like they keep it in good standings. So.
I wish we had a state-run tiki bar. No, that'd probably be terrible here.
So I hope the Maikai fares well through the storm.
Oh, I know. They shut down yesterday evening, I guess.
Yeah.
Sent everybody home, and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, hurricanes are the main reason we left South Florida. I lived there my whole life. I grew up there. So the Maikai was my introduction to tiki, which, you know, you try to compare any, you know, you set the bar that high and everything else just pales in comparison.
Yeah.
We actually got married there a couple of years ago.
I saw the pictures on your Facebook. That's awesome. Yeah. So is that was your go-to, I take it?
Yeah, I mean, we used to go there, you know, my wife, like on her 21st birthday, we brought her there. And of course, they didn't ID her, so she was pissed. She's like, I could have been coming all along.
All this time wasted.
Yeah. But, you know, we used to just go to the Molokai bar because we were just, you know, poor punk rock kids, and it would be like 2-for-1. So we didn't ever do the dinner show or anything like that because you have to pay a cover to see it. And then, you know, food is pretty expensive there. And the drinks, you know, I mean, back then, I think, like, drinks were mostly like 12, 14 bucks, and they're higher than that now. But, you know, when it's 2-for-1, you know, you get the rum barrel for $7 or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's not so bad. And they finally changed. For a long time, they did. It was 2-for-1. So if you ordered one drink, you have to have a second of the same drink. And a rum barrel has 4 ounces of rum in it.
Yeah.
So you're forced to drink 8 ounces there. But then, you know, if there's like 30 minutes left of happy hour, you're like, well, might as well get another one.
Yeah.
And then you're forced into 2 more, and then things get dangerous. So they finally changed the rule to where it's, you know, just half off. Yeah, so you can just order however many you want and just pay half price instead of being forced to drink more. Who knows how many people died just trying to get the most out of happy hour.
Yeah, I really want to go. All the pictures look amazing, and it just seems
it's
like
incredible.
Such a cool place.
Yeah, I mean, the pictures do it no justice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just every square inch of it, there's something to see. And I mean, I don't know how many times I've been, but I find something new every time. And they're always adding new things too. They've had a lot of carvers doing new pieces, you know, because certain ones deteriorate.
Yeah.
They fall down, they, you know, they're just not stable, they have to remove them.
Somebody's had too many rum barrels, tips it over.
Well, yeah. But they lost a pretty impressive one a few years back that had been there for quite a while. It was a Barney West one. So we ended up for our wedding, for all our guests, we had custom tiki mugs made for it.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
We had Tiki Diablo do them.
Okay,
so
sick.
It was a Moai that was based on a 23 or 27 foot Barney West that's out front of the Maikai that's been there for 50 years or whatever. And it's this one here. So he originally made these for us. It has our names on the back of them. And then he did a second run of them, and I think he's doing a third run now that he's like selling to the public that obviously our names aren't on them.
Yeah.
Just a different glaze.
So cool, though. Yeah, I love Danny's stuff. I got the Golden Tiki mug, the first run they had done.
Mm-hmm.
Which
I really like that mug.
I love. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I got the first run, which, like I said, I love it. But then they came out with like the gold one. I'm like, I wish I would have waited.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I just need a second one. But that was my first venture into expensive mugs. I think that one was was probably 100. Maybe a little over.
Yeah.
But it was a run of 100, and it's number 9, so it was worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I love Golden Tiki. So you haven't been to Frankie's or Golden Tiki?
No. Nope. Yeah, so, yeah, I think it was, I'm trying to remember what year it was, last time I was in Vegas, but Frankie's wasn't open yet. I went to, was it Double Down?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the only bar I went to besides, like, casinos and other places, but. Yeah, there wasn't tiki there as far as I knew when I went last, so
yeah.
I'm overdue for a visit.
Yeah, they had a lot of tiki bars. They had the Aku Aku and Stardust,
oh, yeah.
Which looked amazing in all the pictures. So
yeah. Well, they preserved one of the big tikis that was outside. They, mm-hmm. Relocated, so
yeah.
You can still enjoy it.
Yeah. That's cool. So thank you for having us over and making us delicious drinks.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure.
Sitting here with Mike Hooker, fellow Texas Tiki File and owner of Ravon Vintage.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right.
Yeah, me and my wife own Ravon. We're coming up on our 4-year anniversary.
Oh, sick.
So we will have to plan a party of some sort.
Yeah, awesome.
Maybe you guys can play or something.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm
definitely up for that.
We usually have surf bands because it's easier. Yeah. Less people.
Exactly.
We've done outdoor parties where you have bands like set up in the front of the store, and a friend of mine does like competition barbecue, so he'll set up and then we'll get some booze and stuff. And we've done some after hours cocktail parties there as well. That's always fun. Close up shop and then just set up as a bar. So we'll see. November is when the anniversary is, so gotta start getting into the planning stages and figuring out what we'll do.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, congrats on getting to your 4 years.
Thanks.
So how'd you get started with the store?
Purely by accident. We never had any intention of owning or running a vintage store. About 5-6 years ago, I was dealing in records. I used to own a record store way back, and then I sold that, and then I was just selling records privately, like through email lists and record conventions and stuff like that. So I was working from home and had a lot of free time. My wife was working regular retail job. A friend of ours, who is a vendor at Hogwild, that's no longer with us, she said, you know, you guys got a good eye for mid-century, you should think about getting in the business. So my wife kind of got into it part-time, just renting a space. And then I had a lot of free time, so I started helping more and more and more and saying that this is kind of a lucrative business here.
Yeah.
So we did that for about a year at Hogwild and just kept expanding. Like, we started with like maybe a 10x10 space, and then we were like half the store by the time... the owner decided he wanted to sell the property, or he wanted to lease it out. He owned the actual building, and he just wanted to lease it out to somebody. He didn't want to run a store anymore.
Yeah.
And so he offered it to us, but it was a lot more money than we wanted to pay. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to figure out our next move, and it's like, we went to like room service, and there used to be a place called Remixology and Uptown Modern. So we went to all these places like, hey, do you have any vendor space available? Because we like that. We just drop stuff off, and we'd collect a check. We didn't have to work the day-to-day, and we realized that nobody had vendor space. So it's like, if we're going to continue to be in this business, we need to open up our own store. So, you know, we took a leap of faith, and it's not something we intended on doing, and we just never, it's far exceeded our expectations. I mean, we never thought it would, you know, support the two of us and give us a decent livelihood. So it's been great.
That's great. That's awesome to hear that it worked out for you. It's always a leap of faith, and clearly it worked out for you. So that's super cool, man. I'm glad for you.
Yeah, Austin's a good place for something like this. And, you know, it's a very supportive community. I mean, just even like all the other vintage stores send people our way constantly, and we do the same. Mm-hmm. Everyone kind of looks out for one another, which is awesome.
So where exactly is the store located in Austin?
It's on North Loop, close to Burnett Road.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, there's two different vintage districts. There's like where room service is, and where Hogwild used to be across the street from it. So there's a big cluster of shops there. We're about a mile west of that.
Okay.
And then we're right off of Burnett Road, which is another cluster of shops. So we're kind of on the cross path, but we're not in any specific district, but we still get, you know, the cross traffic. And
that's where, what was the pizza place that used to be there off North Loop?
Oh man.
I can't think of what
the Parlor.
Yes.
Yeah.
We played there several times.
Yeah. So the Parlor is now Workhorse.
Okay.
And right next to that is where Hogwild was. And it's now Vulcan Video.
Okay. Well, that's cool. So you've been in Austin, you said, for
I don't know, 10 or 12 years.
Okay.
I'm really bad with time. I have no concept of it. But yeah, I think at least 10 years or so. And, you know, we moved from South Florida to avoid hurricanes primarily. So they haven't had any scares since we left until right now.
Yeah, until Irma currently going on.
Yeah.
So you still have family out there? You said you have a relative in town now?
Yeah, my mother and my brother and my father all live in Fort Lauderdale. And my wife's family all lives in Jacksonville. So hopefully they'll be all right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we had hurricanes where, you know, we'd be without electricity for like 3 weeks, and it would be like a boil water act, and it was just the dead of summer and so muggy and disgusting, and it's like,
yeah, it's already no relief. It doesn't need to be any worse.
Yeah. So we just couldn't deal with it anymore, and we're like, we need to move away from South Florida. And we wanted to go to a music town. I mean, I was playing in bands and doing show promotion at the time. Okay, so it's cool. Like, just wanted to go to a cool city, and it was between Austin and Nashville, and we came out here for a week to visit and check it out and just fell in love and never went to Nashville. We moved shortly after, and it was the best thing we ever did.
Awesome. So what kind of music were you playing?
I was playing in shitty punk rock bands.
Okay. That's the best. What do you play? In my trolling of your Facebook and Instagram, I didn't come across that.
Yeah, that's going back a bit. I played bass, did some vocals. Nothing ever too serious, you know. It was always, if it ceased to be fun, I'd walk away. So yeah. I've been in a million bands, but none of them ever really materialized into anything. And then when I moved here, I just assumed, oh, I'll join a bunch of bands. But it's like, anyone worth playing with is already playing in five bands, and they're have no time. So,
or they're expecting a large payout for every gig.
Yeah,
because it's Austin.
Mm-hmm.
So
I ended up I was running sound at Beerland for a couple years. So that's kind of what kept me in the scene. I mean, I played in a couple bands in Austin, but you know, we played a couple gigs and imploded. So nothing worth mentioning.
But nothing currently.
No, it's funny. We had a garage sale recently, and I was like, should I sell my bass and my amp? I'm like, I haven't even touched these in years. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't bring myself to it. Good. But it's like, maybe one day.
Yeah, that's the story I like to hear. I was afraid you're going to say, and so I sold them both for $5.
No.
Combined.
I sold my PA for $100. I'm kicking myself on that one. It's like, why did I do that? But every once in a while, you just get into that mode of like, must get rid of everything. too many things.
Yeah. It's this or that, and you've gone with Tiki, I can see.
Yeah, I've backed away from record collecting, which was my main thing. I've really downsized my record collection. And really just started obsessing over Tiki. And it's really just in the last few years. We've always known of it and been into it. I mean, obviously, you know, grew up with the Maikai in our backyard. But it wasn't until the last few years that I started getting serious about like making drinks and you know, learning the art of that and collecting the vintage mugs and stuff. I mean, originally I just had some crappy, you know, just generic ones or Tiki Farm or whatever, run of the mill ones. And now it's like I primarily just collect ones from either places I've been or vintage restaurants or bars. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, I have like a Maikai section on the shelf here. I've got a Trader Vic section over there. So most every mug I have now comes from a place.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and like I was saying, that's the way we do it. I like to have used it at least once or drank out of it at least once. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or have a story to tell from the place.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you've got a nice collection. I really liked the Mulder's Tiki Oasis mug. That was super cool.
That thing's awesome.
Yeah.
That's super cool. Yeah, it's... There's so many mugs that, you know, you see the rendering or the photo of it, and it's like, it's okay. But, man, when I saw that in person, I was blown away by it. The detail in it's remarkable.
Yeah, he does cool stuff, and he's doing the Texas Tiki Week mug, which is super cool. Definitely have to get one of those.
Yeah. And he'll be doing a talk about mug making at Tiki Week.
I'm still contemplating taking a half day at work and driving up here.
I recommend you do it.
Because that's the Martin Kate seminar also.
Yeah, so they're back to back.
For both of them.
Yeah.
So
it's at the same spot. One leads into the other.
Yeah.
So the Martin Kate symposium at Oasis was pretty awesome. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that he covered in the book, but, you know, along with visual and just, you know, him adding a little more details and stuff to it. But then, like, at the end of the talk, because I think it was, like, a 3.5-hour block or something.
Wow.
And then it was, like, 2.5 hours in, and he was, like, closing up, and it's like, what's going on? Like, what's he doing with the last hour? And then there was, like, in a conference room that there was, like, you know, a dividing wall between two rooms. And then they opened up the wall to the other room, and they had four bars set up.
Oh.
So it was, you know, it was all the ones that he has a hand in. So, you know, Smuggler's Cove, Holly Pele, Lost Lake, and False Idol.
Yeah.
So they each had their own bar set up. So that was a neat surprise.
Yeah, that's super awesome. Not knowing that going into it, amazing. That's super cool. So it was a good talk.
Yeah, it was enjoyable, and that was one of the highlights for me. The Lost Spirit Symposium was pretty awesome too, like getting all into the science aspect of recreating flavors and stuff. Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried any of the Lost Spirits?
Did you get to try the Navy?
Yes. I actually brought back a bottle of
Yeah, nobody here carries it. My buddy who I did the last episode with, he's the bartender at Hot Joy in San Antonio. He's talking with his distribution guy, seeing if he can get some Lost Spirit in, because, yeah,
I think it'll be difficult. I think they're just not producing enough to get distribution outside of California. I mean, I heard they weren't even in San Diego. Like, we got ours in, or the bottle I got in Costa Mesa. Like, okay. We went up to L.A. for a day trip to check out Tiki T and Oceanic Arts, and on the way back, we stopped at High Times, which is an amazing liquor store. So I got one. They only had two bottles left of the Lost Spirit, so one to me and one to my buddy. But yeah, it's interesting flavor. But he's got a couple things in the works that he was talking about that are pretty exciting.
Yeah, we had gone at the beginning of August to California. If we had had like another day, we definitely would have done the distillery tour, because that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
To take a boat ride into the distillery, nobody does any. It's literally a theme park.
Yeah,
and their distilleries.
Yeah,
so.
It sounds super fun.
Yeah,
and he's a fun guy. I mean, he's full of life and just loves what he's doing. And it's just cool how he analyzes, you know, flavors. Like, if he gets like a quarter ounce of something that, you know, is long out of production and hardly any of it exists in the world, as long as he can get a quarter ounce sample, he can recreate that flavor.
If only he had been around, maybe like. Was it like 10 years ago they had uncovered some 17 Ray and Nephew?
Well, he talked about that.
Did he?
Yes. He knows of one open bottle. He knows of, I think he said 7 or 8 bottles at RC Old that will never be opened.
Yeah.
And never. He knows of one open bottle, and he's offered money, and whoever owns that bottle will not cough it up, a quarter ounce of it. And it's a damn shame.
Yeah. I mean, Denizen is good. I like it. It's a good approximation, but there's just something about it. If you can break down the science of what makes 17-year-old Ray and Nephew what it is.
Yeah. Because, I mean, who knows how close Denizen is? I mean, none of us know what the flavor of that
nobody
is.
Nobody knows. It's our best guess.
Yeah. So, and, you know, Denizen serves its purpose. I mean, you do a 2-ounce pour of Denizen in a Mai Tai. It tastes like a Mai Tai.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's not quite exciting enough. I usually, if I use Denizen, I still blend it with something else.
Okay.
Give it a little more character. I mean, Mai Tai is my go-to drink. I stopped documenting my Mai Tais after about 50 of them or so.
Yeah.
Like, I would just, you know, change the rum combo or the proportions, or, you know, trying different curacaos, trying different orgeas. Adding sugar, not adding sugar, until I just, you know, came up with what works perfect for me, you know?
Yeah. And what is that, if you don't mind sharing your secrets?
Oh, that's super top secret. I have a crowd pleaser version, though. Like, the one I make for myself is not what I usually make when I'm entertaining.
Okay.
Because I don't add any extra sugar. I do a 1/2 ounce of orgeat, which gives it enough sweetness. But when I make it for a crowd, I do, quarter ounce of rich Demerara, do 3/4 ounce lime, 1 ounce Eldorado, 1 ounce Appleton 12, 1/2 ounce BG Reynolds Orgeat, 1/2 ounce Pierre Ferrand. And I think that's pretty standard. I mean, I think that's pretty similar to what Beach Bum Berry and Martin Cade have published. Beach Bum Berry tends to usually put more citrus in, but I find that blend is always a crowd pleaser.
Yeah. I go between the Total Tiki version and the Smuggler's Cove.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Smuggler's Cove, and I've been using the Clément Vsop and Smith & Cross. That's just that funk just punches you right in the mouth.
Uh-huh.
And that first drink, it's the best.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to try a rum called Dr. Bird when I was out in California.
Yes, that's the other one I want to get.
Yeah.
That's still not out here.
No, I hope it makes it. I mean, I don't know a lot about it, except I've heard that it's bottled in Detroit.
Yeah.
So hopefully they can get distribution.
Well, in the distillery, they make a ton of crazy stuff. Like, in that last episode, after we were done, we were talking about it. And we went to the website, looked it up, and they make so many crazy different liquors. They make gins, they make whiskeys,
oh,
they make everything. But that Dr. Bird's supposed to be something killer.
Yeah, it's, you know, I was hoping it would be a Kahala Bay substitute, which I don't know if you've ever experienced the wonders of Kahala Bay.
I have not.
It's the it's basically the I don't want to say this, the extension of what Dagger used to be, like Dagger Rum or Dagger Punch. You know, it's a Jamaican funky overproof rum.
Yeah.
And the Maikai used it in, I don't know, 10 or 12 of their drinks. Black Magic, you know, the 151 Swizzle, the Zombie. I mean, everything that was worth drinking there. I mean, not that there's anything that's not worth drinking there, but the real heavy hitters, I mean, the best drinks all had it.
Yeah.
So it was an important component. And there used to only be two retail places in the United States, both in Florida, that carried it. And Maikai was the only other person that was shipping it in mass. So a few years back when we were in Florida on a driving trip, we stopped in Vero Beach, went like 45 minutes out of the way. I bought two handles of it. It comes in a plastic 1.75 liter bottle for like $30. It's like the greatest value ever. And I mean, to taste it, it's nothing super special on its own. It just blends really well in these drinks. So, you know, I went through the first bottle really quick. And I'm like, when's the next time I'm going to go to Florida? So I started taking the second bottle a little bit slow.
Yeah.
And then I got down to the last several ounces. And I'm like, I got to figure out how I'm going to get more of this. And there's a place called Sunset Corners, I believe, in Miami. And so they had it where they ship it. So I got together with a couple friends, like, let's go in on a case. Placed the order, went through. The next day they're like, oh, we're sorry, we don't ship to Texas.
Yep, you can't ship booze then.
And it was about a week later that it was announced that it's now out of production.
Oh.
And so whatever bottles they had on hand is all they were going to get.
Yeah.
And so my mother, who lived in Fort Lauderdale, I'm like, you going to Miami anytime soon to pick me up a case of this? And of course, they dried up really quick.
Yeah.
So I still have those last few ounces left, and I'm like scared to use.
Well, and so I haven't tried that, but I did. I was going through the Groggalizer. And Jim Hayward,
yeah,
and all his stuff. And I was looking online, and I guess up until a couple weeks ago, his go-to was 50/50
Smith and Gross El Dorado.
Yeah. And I had both of those on hand, so I did a blend of those. I've got them sitting there because I wanna try my hand at a Black Magic. So.
Mm-hmm. It's a good blend. I keep that on hand. Like I keep a bottle of that blend for when I'm making certain Maikai drinks.
Yeah. What's your go-to Maikai drink?
The 151 Swizzle version 4.
Version 4.
It is the most sublime thing on the planet. I mean, it's outside of that daiquiri that I had in Cuba, I mean, it's absolutely wonderful. If I was only allowed to drink one thing for the rest of my life, that would be it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. But we had a 151 Swizzle, or Jen ordered a 151 Swizzle at Three Dots, and it was really delicious. Very, very boozy, but it was really good, so I'm sure that one was even better.
Yeah, I mean, the Maikai, there's just, and you know, they keep changing. Yeah, I mean, certain, like, they had the issue with Lemon Heart, went out of production, and then it came back, and then went out of production, and it's back. And each time it's been a different, it's been different. So they're trying to adapt. Like, they really do have a vested interest in keeping the drinks consistent.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you know, I mean, the last few visits, you know, it's like, this isn't how I quite remember it. But so, you know, that version 4 of the 151 Swizzle is the way it was being made several years back.
Okay.
So it hits the spots for me.
And that has the Kahala Bay in it?
It has Kahala Bay and 151, which I've just been using Hamilton. 151.
I really like that Hamilton 151. I just got a bottle a couple weeks ago, and I really liked it.
Yeah, you know, I prefer it over the new Lemon Heart.
Yeah.
But when Red Label Lemon Heart was, when I heard it was going out of production, I called every mom and pop liquor store in and around Austin, and every chain liquor store in a 200 or 300 mile radius, and collected every bottle I could.
Did you really?
Yeah.
How long did that last?
I've got 7 left.
Okay.
And that frightens me. and I usually don't share that, so it's mostly me just drinking that.
Yeah, I'd imagine something that close. And same thing with the Kahala Bay, I'm sure that will remain for you and you alone.
Yeah, it's just certain nights that I'm like, I need something special for myself right now. I'll dip into the Kahala Bay.
That's awesome, though. That's sure that was a pricey venture, but well worth it to invest in all that lemon heart, because, yeah, I've never tried the original, haven't tried the new stuff, but everything that I hear, it's just not the same, so.
It's funny, we're so picky now that we're, like, complaining that the new lemon heart's not as good as it was, but it's so much better than, like, most anything else on the market, you know. Yeah. I mean, look at Bacardi, I guess they recently got rid of their 151, but,
yeah.
I mean, that was what people knew of as 151 for the longest time. To measure in darkness.
And Cruzan, of course,
yeah,
with their 151. And what is this that you're mixing?
So I am trying to make you a drink that I call the Crimson and Clove. This is something I've been tweaking and working on for a little while now. It's getting a decent response from the people that I've shared it with so far.
Nice. So. So how long have you been doing, or working and concocting your own drinks?
Well, I mean, from the time we moved to Austin from Florida, you know, in my ignorance, I just assumed, you know, growing up with the Maikai, that every city's got a tiki bar, or, I mean, not necessarily on par with the Maikai, but something.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of surprised when we moved here and there was nothing. And so I'm like, how do I get my tiki fix? And sure enough, Jim Hayward, Hurricane Hayward, me and him actually go quite a ways back. We used to promote shows together in South Florida.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, before he was doing Atomic Grog, he had a company called Slammy that did show promotion. And I had a different company and we ended up merging and we did a bunch of cool shows together. We did, like, Dick Dale and Agent Orange.
Nice.
And Circle Jerks. So we did some fun stuff together. And during the course of that, I never knew he was into tiki at all. it never came up.
Yeah.
And so once we moved here, and then he started the Atomic Grog shortly after that, I'm like, oh, cool. And he started doing all these tribute recipes. I'm like, that's really cool. Like, I can make Maikai drinks at home now. He shared with me the rum barrel recipe. I think it was before he had the Atomic Grog up. And it was Beach Bum Berry had published it, I think, in what's the one with the food recipes?
I'm bad with the names.
Taboo Table.
Okay.
In Taboo Table, there's some drink recipes, it's mostly food. But there was a recipe for the Maikai's rum barrel in there. So he shared that, Jim shared that with me. So I was able to recreate the rum barrel at my house. So whenever we have parties, you know, it's something that's easy to batch up. So we just make, like, tons of it at once. And so most of our friends in Austin had never been to the Maikai. They never tasted a tiki drink. So when they had a taste of the rum barrel, they were like, holy crap, this is amazing. And they don't realize that there's 4 ounces of rum per serving in this. So often the next day they'd be like, what did you put in that?
Lot of rum.
Yeah. But for the longest time, that's all I made. But every party, like, we used to entertain a lot. So anytime people came over, make a rum barrel. And, you know, it was quite a while after that my wife kind of encouraged me to get a hobby. this is before Ravon, when I was still working from home. And she's like, yeah, you need to do something else besides just sit around home all day just playing with records. And so she encouraged me to start learning more about drinks. And then I started picking up, like, the Grog Log and Sippin' Safari and all the Beach Bum Berry stuff, and eventually Martin Cade's book, which I think is, like, the most incredible, inspiring book.
Yeah, no, it's just the amount of information he put into that book. And then he has to have more, because, you know, he didn't put everything he knows in that book.
Oh, of course not.
So, I mean, that guy's just got an encyclopedic memory, and
I mean, just his knowledge is insane. I mean just follow him on Instagram, and just every day he's at a different rum fest, or, you know, out learning something new. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah,
kudos for him for following his dream, you know, and really making something quality out of it.
To go from logistics to bartending at Trader Vic's to being the world's foremost authority on tiki and rum. Yeah, that guy's living the dream. But back to what you were saying, Texas not having any tiki. That's why the podcast is called Marooned, because yep. We were marooned to Texas. Now we have Lalo and Howie's, and people are starting to get into it. And you know, it's you never know. It's people are getting into it. They want to try and do it, but nobody's had the stones here in Austin or in San Antonio to do it full time. But I think people are seeing that it has legs, it has some longevity, and you can do it full time if you want to. It's just it has to be done right, and it has to be quality, the drinks have to be done well.
I agree. Did you ever go to what was it called, Concrete Jungle, when it was around?
Yeah, that was all right. They tried. It's just it wasn't. I wouldn't call it tiki. There's yeah, they had tiki drinks on the menu, but it wasn't the best. Hot Joy is, they're doing a lot of cool stuff, and that, like I said, their menu that they have coming up is going to be super awesome. So, yeah, you definitely got to get down and check it out.
Yeah, I listened to that episode, and it inspired me to take a trip down there to check it out.
Yeah. Like I said, the guys are invested in it, and that's why I think it's super cool, and they're doing it right, because mm-hmm. So they have an investment in it, and they want to do it well, so.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. Let me give you some garnish.
All right.
So this is called the Crimson and Clove. You can see by the color, it is the crimson. And the clove not only is in the garnish there, but it's I have a secret spice blend.
Okay.
That's in this. That's kind of high on the clove. Sorry.
Well, to Tommy James and to Texas Tiki. That is fantastic. That is really delicious.
Thank you.
Yes. Keep making drinks. Keep coming up with your own recipes, because you're onto something. That is terrific.
Yeah. So that deep color comes from the hibiscus grenadine that I make.
Okay.
It's got a homemade falernum in this. excuse me. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you all the secrets of this.
Do you make all your own syrups and everything?
Most of them. Make my own... excuse me, sorry.
I hear you.
Allergy's been killing me. Falernum, passion fruit, cinnamon syrup, my demerara, simple. Most anything but orgeat.
Yeah, okay.
I'm really pleased with how good the quality of the BG Reynolds Orgea is. Mm-hmm. It makes a perfect Mai Tai. So I don't see any need to make a mess and go through the painstaking process of making Orgea.
See, and I feel the same way about Falernum, because I made my own Orgea. I really like it. I like it a lot. It's, I think it was part of the missing ingredient. It made my Mai Tais better, so not to toot my own horn, but I like it.
What recipe did you follow?
It's actually one, so I spent days and days researching orgeat recipes. And
I've done the same.
It was just an information overload, and I was like, I just need to pick one and stick with it and try it. So there was one from, it was the Tales of the Cocktail website. Bootlegger Tiki in Palm Springs had done an article, and that's their recipe that I went with, and it's pretty good. They use the blanched and skinless almonds, so theirs is super white. Mine is very, very brown, because I kept all the skin on.
Uh-huh.
I think it adds a lot to the almond flavor. So, yeah, I like it. I'm very happy with it. I'll have to whip up a new batch at some point, but yeah.
So you've never made your own falernum?
I have not.
So what do you normally use? The
John Taylor. Yeah.
It serves a purpose in certain drinks. It's just not exciting enough in others. I'll pour you a taste of my falernum just so you can see. I mean, it's something you can kind of drink on its own. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need to even mix it with anything.
How long do you let yours steep for?
Do you want your cherry?
Yeah.
Luxardo, don't waste it.
Yes, no. Luxardos are magical.
just throw that in here.
Thank you.
And this isn't super fresh. This is Falernum I made kind of a while ago, but it's still... And the flavors change. It kind of hits, like, its peak 2 or 3 weeks in, and then slowly kind of starts to fade off.
That is very tasty. Yeah, that is super good.
Yeah, I mean, some of that on ice is
yeah, fine. Drink that itself. So, was there a specific recipe that you're using for that, or did you just come up with that one?
That is, I think it was like Kaiser Penguin or somebody had like the number 8. Was it Kaiser Penguin? I forget who did it. It was Falernum number 8.
Okay.
I tweak a little bit each time. You know, I've tried it with toasted almonds as I think number 9 added that or something. I thought it was just way too subtle to even really notice that it's there. Mm-hmm. And then once you mix that with 5 other ingredients or whatever in your cocktail, you're not going to taste it. So I don't bother with the almonds. So it's mainly lime zest, clove, ginger. And am I missing anything? I feel like I'm missing something.
Use an overproof rub?
Yeah, use the Ray and Nephew overproof.
Okay, yeah. That seems to be the standard.
Yeah, I thought about using Rum Fire, but I just think it's going to... I think it's just going to... That flavor is going to lend too much to it.
It'd be too potent.
Yeah.
Because that Rum Fire is...
Something else.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Yeah. And that first episode we did with Layla, they were raving about it. They have a cocktail called Fire in the Cane Field.
Yep.
That's so good. That one's terrific. And a perfect blend of that Rum Fire and Mezcal, I think, is what they mix that with.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Well, once you're done with the Crimson and Clove, if you can handle a third, I'll make you a mezcal drink that I've been working on.
Sounds good.
Which is something I've never played with before. I'm not by any means an expert on mezcal, but I wanted to bring that element into a drink and see if I can balance it and make it work.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll make that next.
Cool. So yeah, you got married at the Maikai. That's super cool. As far as Texas Tiki, I see you've got the Lalo mugs, you got Howie's. How do you, with your Tiki travels in Oasis in San Diego and Tiki Tea,
mm-hmm.
what'd you think of that?
Oh, it was awesome. You know, sometimes something is hyped up so much that when you go, it's kind of a letdown. Man, I wish I could have spent the whole day there. We only had like an hour, we're on a tight schedule, and I only got to have 2 drinks, which were both Ray's mistakes. It was
yeah.
Wednesday, so it was like $6.
Yep.
And I enjoyed the first, like, I just, you know, I'd heard everyone's trying to crack the code. What's in this? And I'm like, is it even that good a drink that everyone needs to try to crack this? And it did not let down at all.
No, it's a terrific drink, and I have a recipe that I'll share with you after.
Okay.
That's supposed to be terrific. All the pictures I've seen associated with the recipe look exactly like what I had at Tiki Tea, so
cool.
Real stoked to try that. I just gotta get a bottle of gin. I've got everything else. I made a fresh batch of honey syrup today, so I've got that. That was my prep. I was really wanting a Navy Grog or a Three Dots last night, but I didn't have any honey syrup at the moment. I was just like, I'm not gonna make it, so that's why I made that.
You know, I don't even heat my honey syrup.
Really?
I usually do 2 parts honey to 1 part water, because that's how the Maikai drinks are. It's a rich honey.
Okay.
But if you just stir it up real good, it liquefies and stays liquid.
Okay.
So you don't even need to make a mess of heating it. I mean, it might not keep as long. I'm not sure the science behind that. But I just do small amounts at a time, you know.
Yeah.
Just keep like a few ounces on hand, so whenever I need it, it's ready to go.
Well, see, and then somebody had mentioned one time, because I was like, I don't feel like making simple. And they're like, just get a little more than what you need, throw it in the microwave, heat it up so that the sugar just melts.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a bad idea, so I have to try that at some point, but I keep it on hand most of the times right now, so
mm-hmm.
I haven't needed to try that, but something to try, to keep in your back pocket if you ever need it, need your low or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was a whole thread on Tiki Central about trying to recreate the Ray's mistake, so I've not attempted any of those, so I'm curious if what you have is similar to any of those.
Yeah,
but that's something I would definitely love to be able to make at home. I mean, the Puka Punch is—I didn't try it at Tiki Tea, but the published recipe is awesome. I mean, that's a really great drink. So I don't know if that's the only published recipe they have. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I tried the Ray's Mistake, and then I got a Greg there is famous for his Greg Grog, so I got one of those, which was also terrific. Yeah, same thing. We were only there for a couple of drinks, and went to Tonga Hut, which was a letdown, and so disappointed. Been trying to go to Pacific Seas and got declined.
Yeah, I heard that's so bizarre. You know, Maikai kind of has a dress code. But I think, you know, as long as you're wearing a Hawaiian shirt, you're excluded. Like, you're fine.
Well, and apparently they don't allow hats in the restaurant or the bar, which is, you know, more power to them for trying to keep it original in the way it was back in the day.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is what it is. But, yeah, like I said, I really want to get out to Hukilau because Maikai just looks awesome and seems like a good time.
Honestly, here's my opinion on that. The Maikai is not the Maikai during Hukilau.
Okay.
It's so inundated with swarms of people that you're not going to get the experience if you went like any other time of the year.
Good to know.
But if you do want to just partake in Hukilau and be a part of the events and stuff, I recommend getting to town several days early and checking out the Maikai on your own before everyone shows up.
Okay.
Because we've only gone to one Hukilau, and you know, the one day that we were at the Molokai bar. So basically the way it's set up, I don't know if you know how the Maikai is laid out, but you walk in and like directly to your left, they call it the Molokai bar. And so that's like where we used to go for happy hour. And then like, you know, beyond that is where there's all the different dining rooms. There's like one huge dining room that has the big stage that they do the floor show. And then there's private dining rooms. Like where we got married was one of the private dining rooms. And then there's the enormous garden, with the waterfall and the tikis and the foliage and everything. I mean, it's incredible. The place is phenomenal. But anyway, so the Molokai bar, which usually is not crazy, you know, during Hukilau, it's like we couldn't find a seat anywhere. And it's just, you know, your sardines. And we found like there was a long table that holds six, and there was four people there, and we asked if we can join them. And this guy was like all put off by it. Like, God forbid we like converse with him or, you know, intrude on his space. And he was in a bad mood because I guess he's a regular and he didn't know why all these people were there. And then the drinks don't come out as good because they're rushing them, you know.
Well, and when they've got that kind of volume, I'm sure it's hard to make them taste the same as when there's just a handful of people in there.
Yeah,
that was one of the super cool things about Tiki Tea. We sat at the bar. I had my apprehensions because I was like, I don't want to be sitting in a regular seat, but. Nobody said anything. The people were there. Yeah, this one guy who was a regular. He was super cool, very welcoming, very talkative. So it was definitely an interesting experience, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed it there. So we will have to plan another trip back to LA because I want to hit up other spots in the area. There's so many bars out there.
I know. There's Purple Orchid, Tiki No, Lono. Yeah, there's so many more that we didn't get to go to. Trader Sam's.
Yep. That was actually, we were supposed to do that the day we went to Tiki Tea, and that's one of the reasons we left early, or left promptly, and then we just ended up in so much traffic after like an hour. It was supposed to be like a 40-minute drive, and like an hour 40 later, we're not even close. So it's like, let's just not do this.
How was San Diego?
San Diego was awesome. God, the weather. The day we left, it was 69 degrees, and it was
amazing.
Heat index was 109 in Austin the same day. I don't think it got above 82 the whole time we were there. It was just
perfect.
Phenomenal. And the hotel that they do Oasis at is so cool. It used to be the Hanalei, mm-hmm. And there's a lot of remnants of the past still there. You know, what used to be the Islander restaurant there, which you can find vintage photos online. That's remarkable. But a lot of the original carvings, a lot of PNG stuff still on the walls.
That's awesome.
There's outriggers like at the entrance and just like carved panels and just tikis all over the place. So it's a really cool spot. And our room was like the perfect location. Like we had a direct, like perfect shot of the stage. So
okay.
We didn't even have to like go down to watch the bands. We just watched from a balcony.
Yeah.
But yeah, Oasis was awesome. Like, as soon as it was over, we're like, okay, let's make plans for next year. Which is kind of how we got wrangled into going this year. Like, friends of ours went the year before, and they're like, they had such a good time. They're like, we're going next year. You guys should join us.
Yeah, I wanted to go this year, but I feel like last year would have been the year to go. That monster theme.
Yeah, well, that's how I felt, too. I wasn't totally excited about the intrigue theme. But I heard... And, you know, when tickets went on sale, they sold out immediately. The hotel sold out immediately. And it's like, is this even going to be fun?
Yeah.
Like, we heard about the dude bros and stuff that just go to the room parties and get wasted. And we're like, is this even something we want to do? But I didn't get that at all. Like, you know, our friends who went last year to the Monster one said, you know, all the symposiums ran late or started late. And you're just sitting out in the sun waiting to get in. And it seemed like it was less organized. Like, maybe last year was way more people than they anticipated, so they overcompensated for it this year.
Yeah.
Because, like, everything started, you know, within a couple minutes of when it was supposed to. There's only one time that sucked for us that, like, two symposiums that we wanted to go to overlapped. And, like, one of them actually started late, ran late, and it was already, like, supposed to butt up with another one. Mm-hmm. So we missed, like, half of one symposium. But still, I mean, there's just so much going on, like, everywhere. Like, and there's something for everyone. Like, whatever you're into, there's something you can do.
Oh, yeah, they have yoga in the mornings now. Like, they're so accommodating with everything at this point.
I ran a 5K. This guy organized a fun run. He did it, like, by himself last year, and then people were like, why didn't you tell me you were running? I would have joined you. So he, like, set out a path. And
and then in another couple of years, they'll have 5K medals and everything.
No, I got one.
Oh, did
you? I'll show it to you.
Okay. That's awesome.
So truth be told, I didn't earn that the day of the 5K run. I overdid it the Friday night at room parties. So I slept through the 5K, but I made up for it the next day. So I got an honorary medal for it.
That's odd. That's very interesting to run a 5K during a 4 or 5 day drinking binge.
Yes.
It's going to be a full marathon in
2 years. Yeah. Well, it sounds like it was a blast.
Yeah, and I haven't been to Chicago yet. I've not been to Three Dots or Lost Lake. Holokahiki?
Yeah.
Yeah. We went to San Francisco last year. You know, we did Trader Vic's, we did Tonga, Smugglers, Pagan Idol, Forbidden Island. And my favorite bar of all the ones we went to was Whitechapel.
Really?
The gin bar.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was on the same block as our hotel. It was kind of an afterthought. It's like, we heard it's really great, so, and we knew it's Martin Cates, you know, association with it. So we're like, if we have time, we'll pop in there. And so we did one night, and me and my wife just fell in love with it. It was just the environment, the atmosphere, the staff, the drinks, just everything was just like, I mean, it's not a tiki bar, but it's just like, this is everything a bar should be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's this, tiki's tiki, but a quality bar is a quality bar. I mean, you just can't deny that.
So it's the only bar that I went back to on our trip. I went a second time. And I don't see us going to San Francisco anytime soon, but that alone is a reason to go.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So was there something specific? What was it? Were you drinking something specific?
I mean, it's so far removed now, I can't remember the drinks I had. I did document it on Tiki Central at some point.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just, and, you know, I'm fairly new to gin. Like, it's something that, you know, I for the last few years, we've kept a bottle of gin on hand at all times for certain drinks. But I don't know much about it. You know, I don't know the differences between different gins and stuff.
Between
and so,
Old Tom and Slow Gin.
Exactly, yeah. So we kind of told them, like, what flavors we like. Like, I'm like, I'm into tiki drinks, but kind of the spicier side. Like, allspice, Pernod, like, those kind of bolder flavors. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, we'll make you this. And it's like, they have, like, 100 drinks on their menu.
Wow.
Like, it's daunting. You look at it, and it's like, what do I get? I have no idea.
Just make me something, I guess.
Yeah, but then, you know, you tell them what you want, and they whip it up.
Well, it seems like Martin is a big part of what he does is hospitality, and it seems like that's hospitality right there. You go into a bar and their menu is like a novel.
Yeah.
Being able to tell you or direct you, guide you, that's the most important part, because they could just say, I don't know, make you whatever. But to actually go out of their way to say, okay, this is what you're interested in, these are the profiles you like.
Right. And to be able to whip it up, like, without thought.
Yeah.
I mean, we were at, I won't name it, a bar in Austin that's pretty highly regarded in the craft cocktail scene. And, the lady helping us, she's like, you know, she encouraged us to go off menu. She's like, yeah, well, whatever you want, we can do for you. And then, you know, my group, everyone ordered a Mai Tai, and I've learned not to do that.
Yeah.
The Mai Tai being, like, my favorite drink, I used to judge a bar based on its Mai Tai, but I've realized it's pointless.
Yeah.
Because 9 times out of 10, I'm not going to enjoy it, regardless. Even if they're a quality bar, I'm not going to like their Mai Tai.
Well, and you get so used to the profile or the taste of the Mai Tai that you like.
Yeah. It's like, well, what were you even going for here? I mean, especially if you specify, you know, a Trader Vic or a 44 Mai Tai, and it doesn't come out anything like what it's supposed to. So anyway, so everyone else ordered a Mai Tai, and they were all disappointed with it. And me, I was telling her kind of the same thing, like, you know, I want a rum drink that has allspice or Pernod or absinthe or something like that. And she's like, okay, well, I can do something with tequila and mezcal and jalapeno. And I was like, no, that's not the kind of spicy I'm talking about.
I think you misunderstood spice. Like, I don't want it spicy.
I'm like, no, like, I want it rum-based. I don't want tequila. She's like, okay, I think I understand what you want. And it came back, and it was just a mezcal bomb. I mean, it was just all smoke and nothing else.
Ugh.
So, anyway, what were we talking about?
I don't even know. On that note, disappointing Mai Tais. Yeah, I don't want to, like, just drop a dime on 3 dots, but God, that was the worst Mai Tai I've ever had, hands down.
Yeah.
Now, that said, because it was across the street from our hotel, we did go back the next day and the next 2 days. Every day that we were there, we went. And one of our fellow Texas Tiki File, Carolyn, she said, go right at opening. So we did, and it was so much better, so much more laid back, less douchey music.
Yeah.
No Shakira at opening. God. Yeah, no, there is Shakira played when we went that first, and I'm like, what is going on here, man?
Yeah.
Come on.
But I think the thing is, for these places to survive, especially where they're located, like, they have to cater to the crowd that's coming in.
Exactly.
Because, unfortunately, we're not enough.
No. And that's why I think their Mai Tai was probably more suited towards something that other people would like, because it was so dry.
Right.
It was just...
Yeah.
Like a dry...
That's why I say, like, the Mai Tai I make myself is not what I make others.
Yeah.
I mean, I still do it traditionally for others, but, you know, if you need a certain amount of sweetness for it to be palatable for most.
Yeah.
I mean, not that everything needs to be sugary sweet, but you need to find the right balance.
Yeah.
I mean,
you want something that the rum is going to come through in.
Especially in a Mai Tai, you need that. But, you know, like, the crimson and clove, I mean, there's a ton of spice in there, but it's offset with the grenadine, so there's a good amount of sweetness there to balance it.
And it is very delicious. That is a really good drink. Do you have any other drinks you've come up with yourself that you like, or anything else you...
Yeah, I mean, there's one other one, the one I was telling you with mezcal. You know, pretty much most every night I make one drink for myself. I've been doing this for years now. Because, you know, I wanted to get through the Grog Log or through the Tiki app or whatever. I'm like, I need to try all these drinks. And, you know, unfortunately, like, half of them just aren't good.
Yeah.
And it's like, I can spend time, like, trying to tweak this or do different rums or different whatever and seeing if I can make it better. But sometimes it's just not worth it. It's just so far off. Like, I rate, like, I have a ridiculous log of, like, I don't do it so much anymore, but for years I like, jotted down, like, every drink I made. Like, down to the proportion, what specific brands I used, and I rated it 1 through 10, and with notes of, like, why I liked it or what I didn't like about it. So that way, if I'm like, oh, I want to make a 3 dots, like, what did I think of it last time? I'm like, oh, well, this is the rum blend I used, and I said, oh, cut back on the citrus, or whatever, you know? Like, so I just have some basis, so the next time I make it, I can make it better. Or make it exactly, because it was perfect last time.
Yeah.
So, you know, most drinks, if they rate a 6 or below, I just don't even bother. You know, if I rate it a 7, it's like, well, how can I tweak it up to an 8, you know?
How can you make it a 10?
Yeah. Like, 10 is the unobtainable. Like, even the Atomic Grog version for 151 Swizzle, that's a 9.5.
So even the one drink you would drink for the rest of your life is still a 9.5.
Because I'm still trying to achieve perfection.
What do you think would put it over the top, or have you come across, have you thought of it?
No. Yeah, I mean, because like I said, like for the longest time I've just been making other like classic drinks, you know, recipes that are given to me and seeing if I can tweak them. It's just recently that I started, like, well, let's see what I can come up with. And the Crimson Clove is one of my first like real attempts of like, let's see what I can do. So I'm getting more into it. Like, I think I have more of an understanding of how certain flavors work together and just more an appreciation of rums and stuff. Like, sometimes I'll have friends over and we'll just have like a rum showdown. Like, we did it with Demerara once, we did it with Jamaica recently.
Nice.
We did a 151 showdown one time. Oof. And it's like, yeah, that was intense.
Maybe not that one again.
Yeah. That was a bit much. But, you know, so we'll try them all neat, and then we'll try them all in the same cocktail, and, you know, just compare and contrast. Not necessarily to see even which one is the best, because they all serve a different purpose, you know, especially with Jamaican rums. I mean, yeah. They're so varied, I mean, yeah. Between a pot still and, a column or whatever.
Yep.
So, you know, some are great for mixing, some are great for sipping. So it's really just to learn the profiles, and, like, how can I use this rum? Like, what is its intended purpose? So, you know, so it's just recently that I've really started getting to understand it better. And I feel like anytime I'm like, okay, let me try whipping this together, it comes out decent enough. Like, I'm like, you know, if I was served this at a bar, I wouldn't return it. Which is saying something, because there's, you know, there's tiki bars, even reputable ones, that I'll, you know, I can't finish drinks at, because it's like, doesn't quite hit the spot.
Tonga head. Absolutely. Like, again, not trying to throw under the bus, but man, those drinks were foul. I don't know if it's just the time of day we went, but yeah, it was just terrible. Janet ordered a zombie that was just brutal.
Long Island.
Yeah, it tasted like Long Island iced tea. I don't know what they put in there. The Mai Tai was mediocre, so yeah, not impressed with LA's oldest tiki bar.
Yeah.
So. And then everybody online was like, well, you got to go to the one in Palm Springs. Like, yeah, maybe at some point we'll get out there, but I'm not going to drive 4 hours right now to get out there.
Right.
So,
you know, every bar has its merits. I mean, when we went to the Trader Vic's in Emeryville, we spent a fortune there because we had full dinner and everything and bought ceramics. And so it's like, wow, we just spent a freaking fortune here. And none of the drinks were good. Like, I started with a 44 Mai Tai. And I don't know if you need to specify not to use a mix for them to use, like, to do it right, but, you know, it's sad when you go to a Trader Vic's and your Mai Tai sucks.
And that's why I disagree with their real Mai Tai day. That was my whole spiel, that if you can't even garnish it right and make it look right in your pictures, how are you going to tell people that, no, this is the real Mai Tai, not the other day, this day? And I understand why they say that. But.
Yeah, I mean, I assume somebody just invented National Mai Tai Day.
Oh, yeah.
They picked a date, and then Trader Vic's is like, well, the Mai Tai was invented on this day, so this is when we should celebrate it. It's the real Mai Tai Day. I mean, I see the validity in that.
I'm okay with 2 Mai Tai days.
I'm fine with every day being Mai Tai Day.
Well, yeah, exactly.
It's the fact that we need to, like, distinguish a certain day to be Mai Tai is ridiculous.
You know what? Every Tuesday is going to be Mai Tai Day now. Our every day ending in Y will be Mai Tai Day.
But yeah, I mean, the decor there is so great, and we got there right around sunset, and it's overlooking the bay, so, you know, we got a window seat, and it was a memorable experience, regardless of the food being okay and the drinks being poor. I also had a Navy Grog that was not very good, and then I had a Fog Cutter that was pretty good. But, you know, it serves its purpose.
Yeah.
And like Tonga in San Francisco, you know, been there forever. It's got the lagoon pool thing, you know. I mean, it was a pretty cool experience. You know, we went in hearing that the drinks were just horrendous, but I started following them on Instagram like shortly before we went, and they had just rolled out like a new drink menu. So I was like, okay, this might actually be good. And the drinks weren't half bad. I mean, they weren't exceptional, but they weren't by any means poor. The service was amazing.
Was it
like,
really?
You know, it's that old school hospitality. Like, we didn't make a reservation. And so when I got there, she asked my name. I'm like, oh, crap, we're going to have to wait a while. But then she brought us right in. I'm like, why'd she take my name? But when the server came up to me, he's like, hello, Mr. Hooker. How are you doing today? And so it's like, oh, I get it now. Like, they passed that along. Just, like, the little details like that that still exist in an old school place like that. I mean, I could really appreciate that.
Well, and that's part of the reason that Three Dots won me over. When we walked in the second night, they're like, oh, hey, welcome back. Thanks for coming back. And we were just hanging out. Our plan was just to have one drink, and then we were going to head to Lost Lake. And while we were there, we found out our flight was canceled. So I was like, oh, whatever. We'll just have another drink then. So had a couple drinks. And while Jen was on the phone with Southwest trying to get us new arrangements, our waitress is like, here, this is from me and the bartender. Just wanted to say thank you for coming back. And it was that zombie for two.
That's awesome.
I'm like, that's amazing. That in itself is just, yeah, you just won me over despite your terrible Mai Tai. All the other drinks were terrific, though. Like,
that's weird.
Their painkiller was the best painkiller I've ever had.
Well, you would think that, as Shadow walks in, you know, you would think if they're doing a Mai Tai that's not traditional, they'd at least be doing it, like, super sweet, like, you know, like an island or Hawaiian Mai Tai.
Exactly.
And you said it's super dry, so it wasn't even that.
So dry, yeah. Well, and I was really looking forward to getting as much as I can get. I wanted to get a couple of their Mai Tai glasses. I'm like, I just don't even feel right buying their Mai Tai glasses with their Mai Tai being so terrible. So, yeah. But overall, it's the same thing. It's a huge open room, and then they have separate bars. They have, like, separate rooms in there as well. So it's a very impressive bar.
Yeah.
And walking down, seeing the skull wall and everything, it's just awesome. It's a super enjoyable time. Just like right now.
We have a dog in the room right now.
Just, like, scratching this dog's head. He's enjoying it, I hope. He
well,
just wants attention.
On that note, do you want to take five, get some water?
Yeah.
And
take a break, and
I'll make you your
back.
Next drink.
All right, so we are back drinking our... What are you calling this drink?
This drink I'm calling the Paniolo.
Okay.
Which is Hawaiian Cowboy.
Nice.
There's a history on that if you want to hit google.com. You can learn more about it.
All right.
But I was trying to, conjure up that image of Hawaiian Cowboy. So, you know, we've got mezcal and tequila in the drink, and I've got some nuttiness from the macadamia liqueur and some orgeat in there. So it's a little original creation that is kind of fun. Call it Paniolo.
It's tasty. What a macadamia liqueur are you using? Are you using the Trader Vic or something else?
I wanted to.
is that what you normally use?
No, it's not.
Okay.
So, you know, I went to a Total Wine and got those, like, 99-cent minis of this Kahana Royale just to have a macadamia liqueur. Yeah, so this is the cheap stuff. So when I had this idea to try and invent this drink, and I wanted to have macadamia, I'm like, let me try this macadamia liqueur without shelling out the money for the Trader Vic. And, you know, I did a few tweaks of it, came up with, like, the flavor I wanted. I'm like, all right, well, if I buy the Trader Vic macadamia, certainly it's going to elevate this drink, like, next level. It's going to be amazing. So I buy the Trader Vic, and it's just completely unbalanced. Like, it's a totally different flavor profile.
Yeah.
So it didn't work. So I'm like, I could either completely reconfigure this drink
to that,
to use the Trader Vic, or just use this cheap shit. And I don't know much about it, but it works, and it's like $13 a bottle.
Hey, can't beat it. That's magic number.
Bottled by Hawaiian distilled, but made in California. Anyway.
So yeah, like we were saying, as this episode airs, we will be winding down Texas Tiki Week here in Austin, and we will be leading up to the Tiki Village at Contigo the following day, which would be Saturday the...
something.
What is that day?
16th?
Yes, Saturday the 16th, where you will be DJing, correct?
Yes. I will be playing records for your oral pleasure. A-U-R-A.
Yeah. The R roll. Yeah, we'll go with R. R roll will hit that U a little harder so it doesn't sound like you're going to be pleasuring everybody orally.
Okay. We are three drinks in now.
Yeah. Do you have any specific records you're going to be featuring or just...
You know, just the favorites, you know, the Martin Denny's and Arthur Lyman's. Yeah.
Exotica Volume 1. And,
yeah. I've got the majority of the Martin Denny's, so Exotica 1 through 3, Quiet Village, and onward.
Quiet Village is terrific.
Gene Rains. Got a lot of just vintage Hawaiian stuff. Bring out some Surf 45s. Just a good blend of whatever.
What kind of 45s are you going to be playing?
What you want.
Do you have any Astronauts 45s?
I do not.
See? Astronauts are hands down my favorite first wave surf band. They're the best.
I usually come across their LPs, not the 45s.
Yeah, you always can find a copy of Surfin'.
Yeah. and it's always beat. Yeah. Like people play the crap out of that record.
Yeah, that's what we're talking with Ross about. Every time I see a copy of it, I just have to take it because it needs to come to a good home. And you never know who else is going to come up and want that. No, that's got to come home with me. Same thing with Ventures in Space.
Mm-hmm. I just sold a copy of that today at the shop.
Did you? Yeah. Is it an original pressing?
No, it's a later.
Okay.
I mean, it's on Dalton or whatever. But
okay. Was it the clear vinyl one now?
No. It just wasn't like a super old version.
It was Sundazed. Sundazed did the clear. They did reissues a few years back of all the older records on clear vinyl and.
Yeah, no, this one's still old. It's just not, like, original pressing. Yeah. Like, had the original artwork and everything. But, yeah, that's always... The Ventress stuff is always... goes over well.
Yeah. So you stock records as well. Do you...
Mm-hmm.
Do you change that out, or do you...
Yeah, I mean, I try to keep it to just, like, two crates. Like, I don't want to be a record store. But if I'm going to have records, I want everyone to be a choice record. Mm-hmm. So I keep it small and just well-curated.
Nice.
And I've been downsizing my collection over time, so a lot of what ends up in the bins is stuff that I've accumulated over the last two or three decades.
All right. And you said you're going to be vending out there as well at the Tiki Village.
Yeah, so Ravon will be selling a lot of Tiki mugs. I've got boxes and boxes of them that I've been kind of sitting on. And just whatever else seems fun and appropriate, we'll bring out.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'll play records, we'll sell some stuff, and then there's, I don't know, six other vendors maybe, selling clothing and cookies and awesome stuff.
Boozy Doodler will be out there, I know that.
Sweet.
Yeah.
His piece at Tiki Oasis was awesome. I was very tempted to buy it, but somebody beat me.
I didn't see it. I'll have to take a look at it online.
Yeah. Oh, you gotta see it. It's awesome. It's like a mixed media.
Okay.
It was really cool.
Nice. Yeah, he did the artwork for the show. Jason's super cool. But yeah, so that will be a perfect way to wind down the Texas Tiki Week, and we'll be out there. We'll definitely stop by, check out what kind of tiki mugs you got, and listen to you spin some records, drink some Kona beer. Pick up our Texas Tiki Week mug as well, done by John Mulder. But yeah, so anything else you want to promote? Promote the shop a little bit more before we head out?
Yeah, come spend all your money at Ravon Vintage.
All right, and just like that, you're on social media, I take it?
Yeah, Instagram's the best way to follow us, Ravon Vintage, all one word on Instagram. We're on Facebook, we update the website daily, new stuff comes in every single day. So yeah, if you like mid-century modern, that's what we do.
Sick. Well, and if you'd like to keep up more with the podcast, you can follow me on Instagram at David Fantomatic. You can also check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/maroonpodcast. So thank you again, Mike, for having us out and making us some delicious drinks. And until next time, Nicole Luna, y'all.